The White Sox get stoned. Gavin Stone shoves against the White Sox. Will he be the Dodgers game two starter? We're going to take an early look at the Dodgers postseason rotation. Also, the Dodgers have been linked to an ace. Will they trade for this ace from Detroit? We're going to talk about that. Does Shohei Ohtani belong at the leadoff spot? Because he's making it a very difficult decision in the works for Dave Roberts and his organization. And also, the top five pitching performances in Dodgers history. All that more coming up next on Dodgers Dugout Live.
It's time for Dodger baseball.
Welcome to Dodger Stadium.
Dodgers win!
This is the golden age of Dodger baseball.
Grand slam! It's a double for Freddie.
They're going to make big signings. They're going to make impact trades. This is the most anticipated season in Dodgers history.
Dodgers have won it all in 2020.
Think blue, bleed blue, and I'm out.
What is up, Dodgers Nation? Doug McCain here, credential member of Dodgers Media. Friends call me DMAC. You can follow me on X and Instagram at DMAC underscore LA. And if you haven't yet, be sure to subscribe to the Dodgers Nation YouTube channel, the number one Dodgers YouTube channel in the game, number one Dodgers YouTube channel. Hit the subscribe button, hit the notification bell, and you know what to do. Hit that Gotani down below. So type Gotani down below so you're eligible for our next big giveaway, a Shohei Ohtani gray road authentic jersey. Once we hit 95,000 subscribers, working on some giveaways before then too, so be on the lookout for that. And also, make sure you're always subscribed and you have those notifications on, because then you'll know more about our episodes, when we're going live, when we're doing giveaways. We're going to start doing live giveaways during the live show, where you can only win those giveaways when you watch the show live. So we have a lot going on here at Dodgers Nation. And of course, today's episode is brought to you by our friends over at BetOnline. BetOnline is your number one source for all your sports betting needs this season, from baseball to golf to soccer, right up to the top fights in the UFC and MMA and boxing. Every stat, every matchup, and even live odds and spreads while the games are being played. When the game's over, head on over to our online casino and get in on a game of blackjack or poker, or unwind with one of our over 150 slot games. Head to the website today to get in on the action. Use promo code BLEAV, B-L-E-A-V, for your 50% off welcome bonus on your first deposit. Bet online. The game starts here. Hopefully you bet on Gavin Stone yesterday, because he was outstanding. Of course, every episode of Dodgers Dugout Live, everything you need to know about your Los Angeles Dodgers in less than an hour, starts with the Dodgers Dugout Live poll question of the show. I asked you guys over on the X, who will be the Dodgers game two starter for the postseason? And 30% say Gavin Stone, 58% say Yoshinobu Yamamoto, 8%, little surprising here, I thought this number would be higher, but 8% say traded for pitcher. So will it be a Garrett Crochet, a Jack Flaherty? Will it be the pitcher we're going to talk about in a couple of minutes here? Or Clayton Kershaw? 4% say Clayton Kershaw. So definitely give me your takes on that. Also, where you're representing Dodgers Nation from today. I had someone in the comments. I read the comments after the show too on YouTube. So definitely continue to drop those. We're going to start featuring them on the following the episode. Someone said they quit their job just to watch this show. So I appreciate that. So good times. Hopefully you can just collect unemployment and rock with us every single day. But Gavin Stone, Dodger dog of the game. That's from TJ Martinez. Yeah, he was absolutely
The Dodger dog of the game.
He's got that dog. He's got that slow heartbeat. And we're going to start right there, because that is the leadoff today. The biggest story in Dodger baseball today is a star is born. The Dodgers have a bona fide future ace level pitcher emerging in Gavin Stone. And the Stone Age is upon us in Dodgerland. The Stone Age is upon us. Gavin Stone, he proved once again yesterday that he's not a flash in the pan. This is not someone who's off to a great start and is going to fizzle out. No, this is someone who's proving every start now that he is a future ace level pitcher. And yesterday was by far his best start in his young career. He goes 9 innings, allowed no runs on 4 hits, no walks, 7 strikeouts, had 10 swings and misses. If you look at his last 11 starts for Gavin Stone, he's gone 8-1 with a 1.9 ERA. That is the lowest ERA in the National League in that stretch. He's the first rookie for the Dodgers to toss a shutout since Hyunjin Ryu did it in 2013. He's the youngest Dodger to throw a complete game shutout since Clayton Edward Kershaw in 2013. So we're talking about a rookie that at this point is making it known. His spot in this rotation is set in stone, and I think there's a couple things that have changed with Gavin Stone. And before we get into what's changed with him on the mound, as far as his role on this team and his future has changed in that he has joined the untouchable list of starting pitchers that you're not going to be willing to include in a deal. You're not going to trade Gavin Stone at this point. So that's one. Two, if the postseason began tomorrow with Yoshinobu Yamamoto on the shelf, nursing an injury, making his way back from that rotator cuff injury, with Bobby Miller still trying to work his way back, trying to find that command after that shoulder inflammation injury, with no starting pitchers that have been traded here, no top flight guys as of yet, if the postseason started tomorrow, Gavin Stone would be getting the ball in game two. So look how much has changed from the beginning of this season until now. The beginning of this season, it was about, oh, Yoshinobu Yamamoto, Bobby Miller, Walker Buehler is going to be back, Clayton Kershaw is going to be back at some point. Well, right now, Gavin Stone has been the second best pitcher on the Dodgers, and we're almost at the All-Star break. And he's continuing to go out there and prove that he's going to be a part of this team's future for a long, long time. And I think what really impressed me the most about his outing yesterday was you look at that outing and you saw not just the dominance at times. I mean, that filthy cutter just snuck back in the zone. I mean, this stuff is nastier than a gas station bathroom, nastier than a truck stop bathroom. I mean, this is a pitcher that knows how good he is. Don't be fooled by Gavin Stone's Southern charm. This guy has that dog in him. This guy has the heart of a lion, and he's unflappable. The poise that he shows, the absolute maturity that he displays was apparent throughout yesterday's start, and I think the confidence that he's pitching with now, if he continues to build on that, there's no reason why he can't be a big part of the Dodgers' future and be at the very floor at this point, a solid number three, number four starter, but someone that could go even higher because he doesn't rely on missing bats. He had 10 swings and misses yesterday. What really has taken him to the next level is the ability to use that cutter, is the ability to use that slider and that two-seam fastball, which allows him to miss barrels and get soft contact. That's the biggest difference with Gavin Stone this season versus Gavin Stone when he got rocked throughout last season. We had a 9 ERA in his first taste of big league action at this level. And the big difference, like I said, is yes, the four seam's there. Yes, the changeup is there, but it is his ability to work both sides of the plate and the horizontal movement, right? I talked about it before the season, the east-west of his arsenal now. And if you look at his barrel percentage at 4.9%, that's in the 85th percentile. His hard hit percentage, that's in the 85th percentile at 33.1%. The chase is there. The average exit velocity is above average. The strikeout rate and the whiff rate, they're not above average, but they're trending in the right direction. And another 7 punchouts for Gavin Stone. And I think yesterday really epitomized the evolution of Stone in that when he came up last year, he was a two-pitch pitcher, right? Four-seam fastball and a changeup. Nothing east and west. You had opposing hitters just sitting on that changeup, sitting on that four-seam fastball. When you look at early in that game, bottom of the first, he threw that four-seam fastball and he was throwing it to every hitter that he faced in that inning. Then the second inning, he has the at-bat to Sheets, and he's throwing 3 four-seam fastballs in that at-bat, and he ends up hitting a double on that changeup. After that at-bat to Sheets, he only threw the four-seam fastball a handful of times. He went primarily with that two-seam fastball and that slider and that cutter, and the tunnel accident he gets off of it is he's baiting hitters in the zone to where it'll start outside of the zone and go in, or it'll start inside the zone and go out. So when you have that level of movement and that spin that he has, he's such a dangerous, dangerous pitcher. Then you add the stuff with the mindset, the slow heartbeat, and the approach, then you have yourself a player that I think should absolutely be in consideration for the Rookie of the Year. I think you look at where he's at this point, there's no reason why he shouldn't be up there for the National League All-Star team. If you look at his ERA now, it's down to 273, a 273 ERA for Gavin Stone through 15 starts and 89 innings pitched. The expected ERA, almost a point higher, so there could be that regression monster in there at some point. But the FIP at 233, a 1.8 F4. So the numbers have been there, the performance has been there, and just the absolute moxie, that dog that he pitches with, has been there as well. And Dave Roberts was asked about his performance after the game, and here's what Dave had to say.
Man, he looked like the bulldog tonight. You know, that was really fun to watch. I think that, you know, you can sense a player that the game slows down when they can, specifically a pitcher, starting pitcher, where they can focus on their on the game plan, executing pitches, but also understand, you know, what's around them, what's happening around them. Today we are coming into the game very, very short in the pen. And so certainly to be able to keep that in the back of your mind and know what's expected of you as a starter on that particular night, and then to still go out there and execute pitches and do what he did was pretty special. And I think that's our first complete game of the year, his first of his career. And there was still more in there. And he wasn't stressed at all. The command was an 80 tonight. Austin, I just got to give him so much credit for the fingers and sequencing. And when you're talking about going three times through the lineup, and even a few hitters four times through, you've got to do some different things. And there weren't many balls hit. Robert hit that ball really well to the line out to Rojas. But outside of that, there wasn't a whole lot of hard contact. And seven punch, no walk, and just in complete control, just a dominant performance. And for a young player, you know, with service time like that, was really exciting and encouraging for all of us. I think that, you know, some of the guys in the clubhouse act their age, but Gavin is very mature, very disciplined, and, you know, understands that he's got a job to do, and he does everything he can in his power to prepare and to perform well. And, you know, those are important things. And so, again, he wasn't running from the eighth, wasn't running from the ninth, and he had the blinders on all night long.
It's the fire in his eyes, man. Some great comments here. I see people out there calling him the pit bull. You have the bulldog and Hershiser. Maybe Gavin Stone is the pit bull. Jason Mayo says Stone might be Hershiser 2.0. That's a lofty comparison, but it's a fire take right there. We got Johnny Owen. Gavin Stone's changeup is filthy. It absolutely is. Nando 390. Dave Roberts fell asleep and left Stone out to pitch the whole game.
Bruh.
That's a bruh. I see someone out there asking me about this comment from Dave Roberts. Kelly Washiro says some of the guys act their age. Who is he talking about? I've seen people saying, I'm still waiting for Bobby Miller. Is it Bobby Miller? Look, for Dave Roberts to say something like that, I think that was more of a general statement. Bobby Miller definitely has had some issues on the mound when things don't go his way, and he kind of lets the game get away from him. And quite frankly, he can learn from Gavin Stone. And that really is what separates good pitchers from great pitchers. Good pitchers with great stuff. Give me the good pitcher with great confidence and great poise versus the pitcher that has great stuff that doesn't have the confidence to back it up, right? That doesn't have the mound presence and the demeanor. A lot of this is mindset. A lot of this is being able to go out there and slow the game down, like Dave Roberts said, to keep that slow heartbeat and have that ice in his veins, have the ability to go out there and just go pitch for pitch, execute pitches, and just have that aggression. I think what you love about Gavin Stone, he is an absolute dog, and he says, I'm going to attack hitters. I'm going to go after guys. He's confident in his stuff, and he's also confident in his defense. Someone asked me in the chat earlier about the poise of Gavin Lux and just the ability to put the ball in play, kind of like a Shota Imanaga. Is that going to be
a route that pitchers take? Well, first and foremost, to be able to do what a Gavin Stone does, to be able to do what a Shota Imanaga does, you have to have a little more natural movement. I mean, Bobby Miller, he's got gas. Sometimes the fastball can be a little flat, whereas Gavin Stone, the spin in the location, he can miss barrels with that cutter, with that slider, and that's what makes pitchers special, right? It, velocity, you can't get too caught up in it because a fastball that moves and is well located is better than a flat fastball that has high velocity. It's not hitting his spot. So yeah, he was absolutely outstanding. I'm so high on Gavin Stone at this point. I think, yes, of course, Yoshinobu Yamamoto, you need Yoshinobu to return to really have this rotation meet its peak. And I certainly think that the Dodgers should add another starter, no matter what, just as an insurance policy and just to increase the ceiling, to raise the ceiling for this rotation. But still, Stone's winning you over. Stone is winning everyone over. And I think it's not a situation where, oh, he's pitching well for a rookie. No, he's pitching well for a starting pitcher in Major League Baseball. He has been one of the top 15 to 20 pitchers in the sport, and that's coming off a first season where he had a 9 ERA. So all in on the Stoner. I know all you guys are Stoners out there, so I'd love to see it. Some more comments here. Bilal K, I once said Gavin Stone pitches like, hey, I'm just throwing this ball, but now he has perfected how to dart his placement. Yeah, I mean, there's always that process of guys going from starters to pitchers, right? But the recipe for Gavin Stone, like I pointed out a little earlier, was the refined pitch mix and the fact that he has more clubs in his bag at this point. He was a two-pitch pitcher. Now he throws the slider, the cutter. You see some curveball in there as well. Yesterday, he threw 96 pitches. So, I mean, imagine that, 9 innings, and you're throwing 96 pitches. And 54 of those 96 pitches, that was a combination of his two-seam fastball and his slider. So, yeah, last year it wasn't happening for him just because of the limitations on the mix. This year it's a whole different story. Like I said, you can't be Ryu out there just doing Hadoukens, right? You need the step-by-step Hadouken, either all you can, right? You need the other moves out there to really set yourself apart. We got a 499 Super Chat. Dodgers have been giving me goosebumps lately. I didn't know a sport could do that, LOL. Really? Are you serious? This is from our friend Genevieve Galvan. The lights were kind of bright there. I'm going to be a comment of the show for that. Look, if the 2024 Dodgers, if this era, how about, look, game to game, they're going to have their off nights for sure. It's baseball. Baseball is going to baseball and teams are going to lose. But if the 2024 Dodgers with this roster can't give you goosebumps, this era of Dodger baseball can't give you goosebumps, then really this sport's never going to achieve that for you. But yeah, and it's a good transition there because we're going to talk about a player that makes you say, wow, every time he steps out onto the baseball diamond. And that, of course, is Mr. Shohei Ohtani. Shohei Ohtani has continued to raise his game batting in the leadoff spot. And yesterday was another good example. He starts the game off with a bomb, and this was no wall scraper. This is another deep shot for Shohei Ohtani. And you love the call from Joe Davis. Joe Davis with the marvelous, he calls him the marvelous one. And Shohei Ohtani is someone who's just at the point right now where you almost run out of adjectives. You run out of ways to describe what he does on a baseball field. But I think for me, what really stands out is his approach at the plate and how it's different in the leadoff spot than it was when he was batting in the two hole. And you saw early on that game, that home run he hit, 437 feet for Shohei Ohtani. Just that right there, it was at bat where he saw multiple pitches, right? It was an at bat where Fetty was trying to throw multiple cutters and he made him pay. And he ends up hitting his 25th home run of the season in that at bat. And you look at the at bat, first pitch cutter, second pitch cutter, third pitch sinker, fourth pitch cutter, fifth pitch cutter, and then a sixth pitch cutter. Okay. That's not going to fly because Fetty got whopped by Shohei Ohtani. He crushes a dinger, his 25th of the season, and he makes more history. He becomes the first Dodgers player in franchise history to hit a leadoff home run in two straight road games, and the home run served as Shohei Ohtani's 10th game in a row. It's the 10th game in a row where Shohei Ohtani had an RBI. It set a new franchise record, breaking Roy Campanella's streak that was 9 back in 1955. And I think it's getting really difficult to turn back now because the results are staggering. His ability to go out there and make things happen for this offense. I mean, you look at the third inning, Kike, he singled to center. Barnes, he reached on an infield single. Then Ohtani, he walked on 4 straight pitches. They're terrified to pitch to this guy. Either you pitch to him and he hits it out, gives you an extra base hit, or you walk him so he's getting on base. He's an on-base machine that has slugger's ability. You combine those things, it's dangerous, and it's a pitcher's nightmare. And then Teoscar Hernandez with the bases loaded, he had a sac fly to right. That gave the Dodgers their second run of the night, making it 2-0. And then Freddie Freeman, who is back to being Freddie Freeman once again, he ends up doubling to right. That scored Barnes and Ohtani to make it 4-0 Dodgers, and that's all she wrote. It's all the Dodgers needed with the way Gavin Stone was performing. But for me, my biggest takeaway so far with seeing Shohei Ohtani at the leadoff spot, I mean, you can look at the numbers. He's hitting .378 with an on-base of .500, a .946 slug, and an ungodly .1446 OPS with 6 home runs and 3 doubles in 10 games. So 10 games, those numbers are absolutely eye-popping, but you add the fact that the strikeout rate in 48 plate appearances, and you look at his last 10 games, a 12.5 strikeout rate. So a .351 weighted runs created plus. So the strikeout rate has gone down. He's seeing more pitches. And I think that one of the big reasons why you would want to leave him at that leadoff spot is when he's batting leadoff, he stays within himself. He goes to the plate with a leadoff hitter's mentality, a leadoff hitter's mindset, where he's not trying to go out there and give you big daddy hacks and swing for the fences on every pitch. He is seeing more pitches. He's not offering at pitches and chasing at bad pitches out of the zone. He's able to get that elevated fastball. He's going to the big part of the field. He's going deep center. And that's the beautiful thing about Shohei Ohtani is for him to get slugger's results, he doesn't have to go out there and try to slug. If he goes out there and stays within himself and just tries to get on base, tries to make good things happen, the slugging comes naturally. So I definitely think at this point, you have to seriously consider leaving Shohei Ohtani at the leadoff spot because it's an automatic on-base machine. It's a player that could go deep. And I also think that you could get a better version of Mookie Betts because Ohtani can impact the game more with his speed at this stage of his career than Mookie Betts can. And I think Mookie, you want to see him turn up the slug a little bit. And with Shohei Ohtani batting leadoff and Freddie Freeman going right behind him, you can't pitch around Mookie Betts at that point. So I think you'll see him go gap to gap. You'll see him leave the yard with more regularity. So I definitely think that, obviously, you never want to lose Mookie Betts, but they might have just stumbled into their best lineup. They might have just found something that's going to take this offense to a whole nother level. I mean, it's insane. The Dodgers have done the impossible. They found some way to replace the best leadoff hitter in baseball with an even better leadoff hitter. Think about that. How insane is that? And there's no slight to Mookie Betts. Mookie Betts is going to go down as one of the best players of all time. Shohei Ohtani could go down as the best player of all time. And I think it's very interesting. I think it's something they have to seriously consider. Shohei Ohtani, he's out there doing big things for this team with Mookie Betts out. But really, the big talk about yesterday, the biggest play yesterday, it was not the home runs by Ohtani. It was not a hit for Miguel Rojas, which locks the win, which seals the win. Miguel Rojas gets a hit yesterday. The Dodgers, they're 24-0 when Miggy Rowe gets a base hit. It was this save from the Dodgers bat boy. The Dodgers bat boy, Mr. Javier. Let's check this out. I mean, this is unbelievable stuff right here from the bat boy because Shohei Ohtani is chilling in the dugout, And you're always a little afraid. Okay, hot shots. And look at this shot right there. Look at this right here. I mean, hot shot off the bat. Javier, boom, great reaction time. Makes the catch. And he just drops it off like, hey, here, just doing my job. Just doing my job. I mean, unbelievable stuff right there. And then he just drops it off. This guy saved the season. This guy saved the season for the Los Angeles Dodgers yesterday. I mean, that bad boy Javier, Mr. Javier Herrera, he saved the season for the Los Angeles Dodgers. He is going to get the nicest World Series ring for this team because he absolutely had those high reflexes, those quick reflexes. I mean, if that hit Shohei Ohtani, it could be out for some time. I mean, so give him a lot of credit. I wonder what color Porsche Shohei Ohtani is going to get this bat boy for saving his life. Mr. Javier Herrera, I hope it's a Dodger blue Porsche. He absolutely deserves it. Mr. Classic says, Shohei going to gift a Porsche to Javi. That's what I said on Twitter. First thing that came into my mind, give Javier a Porsche from Kelly Oshiro. He absolutely saved the season. I like Golf Grouch says, bat boy or Batman. Give him a raise from Craig Osterberg. Yeah, give this guy a raise. Give this guy the lifetime contract that you gave Andrew Friedman, that you gave Shohei Ohtani. I mean, give this guy a bag. So good stuff from the bat boy right there. Norman Rose says, nastier than 7-Eleven sushi. He requested a Toyota Supra. That's from Alfonso Lucio. Hey, that Toyota Supra is nice. So some more comments. Norman Rose says, Mookie's going to have to pay Ohtani to get his leadoff spot back. That's from Norman Rowe. Fire take right there. They both have tons of money. Got $1 billion between those two pretty much. Kelly Oshiro, FYI, this year's June is down for Shohei compared to last June. He can do better. Yeah, like June Tani is real. He has the highest slugging percentage for any player in the month in the history of Major League Baseball. But still, I think at this point, you do one of two things. I've said it all week. Keep Ohtani at the leadoff, and then you stagger them perfectly. Lefty and Ohtani, righty and Betts, lefty and Freeman. And then Will Smith, who has struggled in the cleanup spot, or Teoscar Hernandez, or you move Freddie to the cleanup spot. And then you put either Teoscar Hernandez or Will Smith in the three hole. That's the most optimized lineup, in my opinion, when you look at the MV3 or the Mount Crushmore, the top four in the Dodgers lineup. But next, we're going to talk about a pitcher that the Dodgers could go after, an ace. This guy could end up being the biggest ace, the most impactful ace that could be dealt at this deadline. I'm not talking about Jack Flaherty. I'm not talking about Garrett Crochet. I'm talking about another pitcher. That's coming up next on Dodgers Dugout Live. What up, Dodgers Nation? D-Mag here. I'm here to remind you that if you have not yet, be sure to subscribe to the number one Dodgers YouTube channel for all latest Dodgers news, rumors, hype videos, interviews, breakdowns, live streams, and more all year long. Hit that subscribe button. Hit that notification bell. And if you really want to help the channel out, smash that like button. Also, you will not be eligible for any of our giveaways unless you are subscribed to the channel. So all you need to do to be eligible for all of our giveaways is just make sure that you are subscribed. We just gave away a brand new authentic Mookie Betts jersey valued at over $350. And we got tons of giveaways coming this offseason. So be sure to be subscribed so you are eligible to win. And as always, think blue, bleed blue, and please subscribe. And welcome back to Dodgers Dugout Live. My name is Doug McCain. Welcome back to the show. By the way, I got producer Tonio, who's looking for all of your takes. Tony Taters is in the mix. Tony Taters, I mean, would you have made that catch? You have quick reflexes.
I mean, I did play third base. I think I still can, but I don't know. That ball came in hot, but look at that. If I had a glove, 100%, but barehanded, actually protecting Shohei, I think I would have, right? But easier to say than not, right?
For me, I'm not even worrying about trying to catch it. I'll put my face right there if I have to save Shohei Ohtani. I will take a bullet. I will take a baseball for Shohei Ohtani because that is the Dodgers ticket. Paulo Romo says, no way he makes that catch. Hey, this guy is a world-class softball player. You got to see Tony Taters. He's called Tony Taters for a reason. Keith Potter says, Dodgers Nation, I would have snapped that off 100%. Your face will get smashed, D-Mac. Hey, if I do what I got to do for the Los Angeles Dodgers, for this team to have success, because Shohei Ohtani is the key to this franchise for the next 10 years. But next, we're going to talk about another starting pitcher who could be dealt at the deadline that could end up having the biggest impact. And I'm talking about Detroit Tigers left-hander Tarik Skubal. And this is from Jim Bowden of The Athletic. he wrote about executives and some of their takes and opinions and feelings towards the upcoming trade deadline. And he had this to say about Tarik Skubal. There were two executives who mentioned Skubal, which totally shocked me. He has been a Cy Young Award candidate all year, going 9-3 with a 2.32 ERA over 16 starts with 112 strikeouts and 97 innings. He's tied for the major league lead among pitchers with a 3.9 BWAR, and he comes with two additional years of control. However, both of these execs suggested if a team like the Orioles or Dodgers decided they wanted to trade significant prospects, both in quality and quantity, there could be an offer so good the rebuilding Tigers won't be able to say no. Now, that would be a stunner. So first and foremost, let's break out that Dodgers rumor meter. And for the Dodgers rumor meter, I got that at easily a 2.5 Dodger dogs. I'm not throwing it at 3. No serious smoke. I got that as a little more than people are talking, but closer to the 3 Dodger dogs, because the Dodgers have already made it clear in my eyes that they want to add another starting pitcher. I think they've been burned by too many bad luck situations in the past, and you can never have enough starting pitching, even if Yoshinobu Yamamoto returns, even if Gavin Stone continues at this pace. I mean, there's no question that Walker Buehler returns to form, or Clayton Kershaw does as well. You have to take matters into your own hand, be proactive, not reactive. Now, let's look at Tarik Skubal and his numbers on the season. A 2.32 ERA, that's fifth. A 2.82 expected ERA, that's seventh. A 2.69 FIB, that's good for ninth. A 2.92 expected FIB, that's good for seventh. A 10.39 strikeouts per nine, that's good for 13th. So across the board, all the metrics, they'll tell you that Tarik Skubal is a top 10 pitcher in all of Major League Baseball. He's under 2 more years of team control after this season. So that's in line with Garrett Crochet, who also has 2 more years. So the big difference between Crochet and Skubal and Flaherty is Skubal and Crochet, they have 2 years of team control left, whereas Flaherty would be a rental for the remainder of this season. Now, I think the difference between Crochet and Skubal is Crochet is dominant. He has the potential to be lights out throughout the postseason. You can even use him in a hybrid role. Go full Josh Hader with him if you want. He's an absolute weapon. Skubal, though, a little more of a proven track record as far as innings and his ability to go deeper into games. He's done it for longer. Whereas Crochet, he's already maxed out as far as the most innings he's ever thrown in a season. The most innings he's thrown in a season before this was 65, and that came back when he was with the Tennessee Volunteers. He only made 12 minor league starts. So Crochet is a more of an unknown, where Skubal is more of a proven quantity. Now, what makes him special? What makes Skubal special? Well, it definitely is the fact that he has one of the most effective four-seam fastballs in Major League Baseball. He has the 10th most effective four-seam fastball in the sport. And the biggest reason why that's changed for him is the velocity has gone up. A couple years ago, he was averaging just around 94 miles per hour on that four-seamer in his first 3 seasons of his big league career. That average has continued to go up, and that is something that is very attractive for the Dodgers. They wanted Tyler Glasnow because he was a fireballer. Well, if you look at Skubal, he's averaging 96.7 miles per hour on that four-seam fastball. Opponents are hitting 178 off of it. He throws it 32.3% of the time. A couple years ago, he was averaging 94. So you're talking about a big increase in fastball velocity. And Skubal has stated many times that that's due to a subtle mechanical adjustment that he made during his rehab. So sometimes when you're going through your rehab, pitchers will have so much time on their hands, right? You have rehab, you're going, you're playing PS5 with your friends, you're chilling all day, and then you're saying, you know what, let's review the tape. Let's look at some stuff. Let's review footage. That's how you can make some mechanical adjustments. And Skubal did just that. He made some mechanical adjustments. And that took a four-seam fastball that was 9 runs below average in 2021 and 2022 to 10 above average. So that four-seam fastball is 10 above average. That's how good it is. And you also pair that with his changeup. He's throwing his changeup more. It's a new and improved pitch. He's always had it in his repertoire, but now he's throwing it more, and it's become his biggest weapon against right-handed hitters. This year, he's throwing his changeup 27.1% of the time. A couple years ago, throwing that changeup around 16% of the time. It was down to 12% of the time in 2021. So this is a pitcher that's developed. This is a pitcher that has changed his attack plan and his arsenal. And he's just coming off a start where he outdueled Ranger Suarez. He is someone that has absolutely found his footing as a premier starter after that flexor tendon injury wiped out the rest of his 2023 season. So I think if I'm the Detroit Tigers, the discussion has to be, if you're not going to pay him in 2 years and you're not getting an extension done, might as well take advantage of him now while his value is at its absolute highest. And if you're the Dodgers and you want a pitcher that can help you this year, but also the following two seasons, maybe you go that route. Maybe the Dodgers don't feel confident about Roky Sasaki. Maybe they fear a Yoshinobu Yamamoto injury. Maybe they fear a Clayton Kershaw retirement, right? So you always have to be forward thinking when it comes to adding starting pitching. And look, if you're the Tigers fan, I feel bad for you, right? Get those brown bags ready. You'll be wearing them for years when your team is a bottom feeder. But you can't start the process of a rebuild unless you're taking advantage of the talent that's not going to help you in your window and going out there and getting them. Because look, it's tough. Anytime you're going to trade a Cy Young Award level pitcher for a bunch of lottery tickets, it hurts, but it makes a bunch of sense. But let me know down below in the comment section, do you like the idea of a Tarik Skubal? It would cost a lot. You would have to really, really pay a ton in terms of prospect capital to get him. We're talking about three top 10 prospects, a Josue de Paula, right? You're going to have to possibly give him a Dalton Rushing. I mean, we're talking about the top of the Dodgers farm system. That is the price of doing business if you're going to go out there and get an ace. That's why, for me, I like the idea of a Jack Flaherty. Jack Flaherty, you could get him for a lot less because he's on an expiring contract. I mean, it could be a Jack Flaherty for a Justin Robleski, a River Ryan, names like that, which are definitely prospects on the rise, but they're not your top shelf prospects at the moment. And then you could use those top shelf guys to get another bat if you want to go that way. Got Kenny Chung, no one Skubal would rather get Flaherty. We got Kershaw's an all-time Dodger legend. We're Amazon, get it done from Chris Heasley. See what, got a fan of the show right there. It's a fire take. JF is the man. That's from Monster. DMAC, like you always say, parades over prospects. Yeah, Keith Potter, there's no doubt about that. And I'm not against using the prospects to get the parade that you want to go to. But I also want to kind of keep those top guys because I do think you want to add a position player. I want to get Randy Arozarena in Dodger Blue. I want to get Luis Robert Jr. in Dodger Blue. Bo Bichette is a name I'd still consider, but I'm fine with the current nucleus with Miguel Rojas playing the way he is. And Mookie Betts, when he returns, we'll see what they do with him, second base or right field, or bring him back to the shortstop position. But Pablo Ramos says Kershaw is a reliever now. Stop thinking cheap. That's from Bilal K. DMAC. You guys know me, man. I would trade. Here, take everything. Here's the watch. Here's the ring. You know, I'll give everything for win now players. It's not that. I think that I would, if I had to pick between Garrett Crochet and Tarik Skubal, that's really a tough situation because both are dominant, but Crochet's dominant on a whole nother level when he's on. But Skubal is someone that could actually impact the game on an equally as high level that has a more proven track record. That's the kind of stuff that would keep me up at night. So I'm definitely ready to trade these prospects. There's no such thing as an untouchable prospect, in my opinion, because you don't know what players can truly become available. But I definitely think that in this situation, Skubal, you could get that ace in Jack Flaherty and then use that prospect capital for another bat that can help you not just this year, but next year. Remember, all the guys that they're looking at as the big impact position players, they're under team control for multiple seasons. Randy, Luis Robert Jr., Bo Bichette a year after this season as well. I mean, you got the Tyler O'Neill types that are in there as well that you could go after as rentals, but I think they're going to go bigger and they think they're going to bring someone in that's under multiple years of team control as a little bit of a protection with Teoscar Hernandez beyond an expiring contract, right? Remember, This is the same team that went out there and traded for Trey Turner when they already had Corey Seager, and then put Trey Turner at second, knowing that Seager likely was going to walk and take over that shortstop position if you're Trey Turner after that. So it does happen. But here we go. Daniel asked for, does DMAC get a championship ring now? Peace. Absolutely. I hope so. I hope we do. But let me know down below in the comment section. Tariq Skubal, do you want to see the Dodgers trade for him? On a scale of 1 to 10, how high are you on him? Kelly Oshiro says, we don't need a shortstop now if we put Mickey Rowe there every day. Look, I've been the president. I've been El Presidente of the Keep Miguel Rojas at Shortstop fan club, okay? That's definitely something that I would do too, because you need pitching. You absolutely could use another bat. But we played this game before. We've seen this movie before. We know how it ends. You got to get as much impact arms, as many impact arms as you possibly can. But coming up next, we are doing a high five. You do not want to miss this one. Next high five, we're doing the top five pitching performances in Los Angeles Dodgers franchise history. That's coming up next here on Dodgers Dugout Live. What up, Dodgers Nation? D-Mag here. I'm here to remind you that if you have not yet, be sure to subscribe to the number one Dodgers YouTube channel for all latest Dodgers news, rumors, hype videos, interviews, breakdowns, live streams, and more all year long. Hit that subscribe button. Hit that notification bell. And if you really want to help the channel out, smash that like button. Also, you will not be eligible for any of our giveaways unless you are subscribed to the channel. So all you need to do to be eligible for all of our giveaways is just make sure that you are subscribed. We just gave away a brand new authentic Mookie Betts jersey valued at over $350. And we got tons of giveaways coming this offseason. So be sure to be subscribed so you are eligible to win. And as always, think blue, bleed blue, and please subscribe. And welcome back to Dodgers Dugout Live. Got some comments here. Albuquerque in the house, 87110. Shout out to Albuquerque. We got, what about trading for Flaherty and Cannon from Chris Frostacre? Hey, that's something that you can entertain as well. We got Gotani from Marcos. Yeah, if you haven't yet, definitely comment Gotani. You guys talking about Bronny at 55. Hey, we got Golf says, Ipe just delivered my pizza. It's a fire take right there. Yugamali. Doug, what don't you follow streamers to make a one-night subscription for real fans of the channel and help provide more revenue? Hey, we'll talk about that. Talking business, I appreciate that. We'll look into that. Andre Skubal is the best pitcher on Detroit, period, but would cost more F them prospects. Who gives, though? Give me that lefty flamethrower. Yeah, I'm all for it. I'm absolutely all for it. I mean, seriously, if it's give those guys an opportunity with another franchise. I mean, if I'm a prospect on this Dodgers team, in this Dodgers organization, I'm feeling like I'm blocked, right? I feel like I'm not getting the opportunities that I want. So it really is a situation where you give them an opportunity with another franchise to see what they can do, and they could end up better in the long run as far as their financial ability and their ability to make money. So definitely it's not the worst thing in the world. I mean, you ask any of these minor league coaches and these scouts, they'll tell you that anytime you go and play a minor league game for the Dodgers, you're not just auditioning for this team. You're auditioning for teams around all of Major League Baseball. So that's always the case, but we got our high five. Of course, we call it the high five here. That's my top five list. And it's the high five because the Dodgers, they invented the high five. And with Gavin Stone's performances, shutout, complete game, got me thinking, what are the top five pitching performances in Dodgers history? That's coming up next. So some honorable mentions for me personally, especially Tony Taters as well. Lima time, game three of the 2004 NLDS. The Dodgers had no postseason success for pretty much almost a decade. And he goes out there, he wins that game. It was Lima time. It was jubilation. I was at that game at the Ravine. That was great, but it doesn't crack the top five. It's probably not that close to the top five, but the top five is exclusive territory because this is the organization that's built on pitching. Since the Dodgers moved to Los Angeles, they have the lowest ERA of any franchise in all of Major League Baseball. Now, coming in at number five, I have Fernando Valenzuela's opening day start in 1981. Now, it wasn't Fernando's debut. Fernando had pitched the previous season. He pitched in 10 games, 17 and two-thirds innings. He was pitching very well, hadn't given up a run, but he was thrusted into the opening day start against the Astros in 1981 after Jerry Royce was injured. He hurt his leg. And Valenzuela, he goes out there and he shuts the Astros down. He shuts them out, a complete game shutout. And that was the start of the phenomenon known as Fernando Mania.
So with two out, a full count, Howe ready to go. And listen to this crowd. Most of the folks on their feet now. Valenzuela delivers. Screwball got it swinging. What a way to start. Fernando Valenzuela in his first big league start. Pitches to the shutout.
And yes, it's not a game that was in the World Series. Yes, it's not a no-hitter, a perfect game. But if he doesn't go out there and have that performance, do we really get Fernando Valenzuela? Do we really get Fernando Mania? We'll never know. But we got that in that game. And he would go on to go on one of the best pitching runs that we had ever seen in Major League Baseball. He didn't allow a run in his first 34 and a third innings that season. His first eight starts, they were all complete games. He had five shutouts. He had four earned runs total. He won the Rookie of the Year that year, the Cy Young that year. And he won 13 games and pitched 192 innings and had eight shutouts in a season that had a two-month strike. So the year he had was phenomenal. Fernando Mania changed the entire franchise. It changed the culture. It had an impact that transcended just baseball in general. It brought the Latino fan base into Chavez Ravine and changed this franchise forever. The Dodgers that you know and love, the Dodgers as you know it today, would not be what it is if it weren't for Fernando Valenzuela. It all started there on opening day in 1981. Then coming in at number four, personal favorite of mine, definitely a personal favorite of mine, that is the Hideo Nomo No-No at Coors on September 17th, 1996. Now, before you talk about the game itself, before you talk about Vin Scully's legendary call, Hideo Nomo has done what they said could not be done. Well, the reason why Vin said that was because it was at Mile High, because it was at Coors Field against a potent Rockies offense. I mean, Ellis Burke had just won National League Player of the Week. That offense was humming in Coors Field. And if you look at the ballpark factors, the Coors Field ballpark factor in 1996 was 123. Now, what does that mean? That means that offenses, they were boosted and improved by 23% compared to the rest of the league. 100 was league average. At Coors Field that season, 1996, it was at 123, so 23% above average. The second closest was 105. So it was the toughest place to pitch if you're a starting pitcher. And Hideo Nomo goes out there and he pitches a no-no. And the beautiful thing about it too was that he had a rain delay. There was a rain delay in that one, but he still went out there, and it was one of the most memorable performances in Major League Baseball history. And I also want to point out this. A lot of people don't remember this. Hideo Nomo had gotten rocked at Coors Field before he had pitched there. In his two starts at Coors, he had allowed 16 runs on 18 hits in 9 2/3 innings with five home runs and 10 walks. So he goes into the game with knowing that and on a two-hour rain delay, then goes out there and he pitches a no-hitter. So a fantastic performance there. September 17, 1996, Hideo Nomo's no-hitter at Coors Field. He's still the only pitcher in Major League Baseball history to throw a no-no at Coors Field. Legendary stuff from the Tornado. And then coming in at number three, Sandy Koufax, Game 7 of the 1965 World Series against the Minnesota Twins. I think you lump together Game 5 and Game 7. This was all world stuff from the left arm of God. He had a World Series clinching shutout, a World Series winning shutout performance by Sandy Koufax in Game 7 on 2 days rest, coming off a start where he had just pitched a complete game. He had just had a complete game on four hits in Game 5, and then he shut down that powerful, potent Minnesota Twins offense once again. He allowed three hits. He struck out 10. The Dodgers win 2-0, and they win the World Series. And the thing that blows my mind, the most mind-boggling detail, was he told Vin Scully after the game that he only had one pitch. He was only pitching with a fastball. So the good thing about Sandy Koufax is, yeah, he would tip his pitches sometimes, right? Every time he would lift his arm, it was a tip that a really good pitch was coming your way and was probably going to strike someone out or miss a bat. But number three, game seven of the 1965 World Series, Sandy Koufax.
He did it. Sandy Koufax gets his 10th strikeout, his second consecutive shutout of the Twins. On Monday, on a four-hitter. Today, on a three-hitter. Every pitcher, of course, likes to finish a game with a strikeout.
Love it. I'm pretty sure we're going to see Sandy Koufax again at some point on this list. Coming in at number two, we talked about this one last week, and that's Clayton Kershaw's no-hitter against the Colorado Rockies. 323 no-hitters in Major League Baseball history. His is the only one to have no hits, 15 strikeouts, and no walks. I always call it the perfect no-hitter. The only games ahead of Clayton Kershaw as far as his game score that night with 102 are Kerry Wood's 20 strikeout game where he had a 105 game score, and Max Scherzer's 17 strikeout no-hitter where he had a 104 game score. So it's the third highest game score in Major League Baseball history at 102. The only thing that kept it from being a perfect game was an error by Hanley Ramirez. That one still hurts, but still an unbelievable performance. One of the best performances in Dodgers history. Came against that Cubs team. I mean, came against that Rockies team. Just unbelievable stuff from Gochaw.
0-2.
Got it. He's got it.
Yeah, I mean, if you want to consider Roki Sasaki's perfect game, you want to consider that. Of course, talking about big league history, and yeah, Roki Sasaki's perfect game was a thing of beauty. But Clayton Kershaw, unbelievable performance, his only no-hitter, and just a great call by Vin Scully, just letting the moment just capture itself, just listening to the fans, watching him embrace AJL. It's just unbelievable. And then coming in at number one, the only perfect game in Dodgers franchise history, September 9th, 1965, the fourth no-hitter in 4 years for Sandy Koufax, but this time it was a perfect game. And what made this so spectacular is the myth around it, the mystique around it, the fact that you don't have that footage of the game that we have with other games, right? You have to listen to Vin Scully's call. You have to watch the footage that we do have. And he got better as the game went along. The first time through the Cubs order, he struck out four. Second time, he struck out three. But what made this so spectacular is he had one strikeout in the seventh, and then he struck out the final six batters. He punched out the final six Cubs. And also, there was no margin for error. No margin for error, because this game was almost a double no-hitter, right? Because the Dodgers, they got just one hit in that game. Lou Johnson had a bloop double there in the seventh, but no room for error, because Bob Henley of the Cubs, he was dealing that night too. I mean, the only run that the Dodgers scored that game came in the fifth inning when Lou Johnson, he drew a walk. They bunted him over to second. He steals third, and he scored after Chris Krug, he threw the ball into left field. So the offense was at a premium that night at Dodger Stadium, and it was the most incredible perfect game in Dodgers history because it was the only perfect game in Dodgers history. His game score was 101, 1 point behind Clayton Kershaw's 102. And I thought it was cool what Sandy Koufax said after the game. He said, "I knew all along I was pitching a no-hitter, but I never crossed my mind that it might be a perfect game." And one of the most badass comments I've ever heard from any player by any pitcher is there's a story about Sandy Koufax and how he knew it was the end of the game. And the way he knew it was the end of the game is that he'd be shaking the catcher's hand, meaning he knew he was going to go nine. He knew he was going to get that win. But absolutely coming in at number one, Sandy Koufax's perfecto against the Cubs in September of 1965.
It is 6 p.m. 2-2 to Harvey Keene. One strike away. Sandy into his windup. Here's the pitch. Swung on and missed. A perfect game.
Unbelievable stuff. Sandy Koufax. I mean, if he had not gotten injured, there's no doubt about it. He goes down as the best pitcher of all time. A sub one ERA in the postseason. The perfect game. Multiple no hitters. So there's my top five right there. You got Fernando. Mania kicks off in 1981. You have Hideo Nomo's no-no at Coors Field September 17th, 1996. At three, Koufax's performance in the 1965 World Series. Number two, Clayton Kershaw with a no-no against the Rockies at home. And then number one, Sandy Koufax's perfecta. But let me know what you think about my list. Do you have someone higher, someone lower? What do you grade my list? Do you want to see the Dodgers trade for Tarik Skubal? Let's get some walk-off shots right here. Kelly Oshiro says, oh, that gave me goosebumps. Mr. Classic says, Koufax, his fastball velo was at 93.2 miles per hour. Keith Potter, D-Mac, Dodgers pitching perform is number one. Chan Ho Park got Tim Belcher with a spin kick, LOL. Keith Potter, funny story about that with Chan Ho Park is he has said that one of the reasons why he did that spin was because he was afraid that he was going to get him in the face with his spike. So we kind of pulled off at the last second there, but yeah, that was good stuff. Professor D-Mac for Hall of Fame. I appreciate that. I'll give you a comment of the show for that one. Koufax would blow today's hitters away. Arcade light grid. Nope. Voting is closed. It looks like we got, yeah, definitely go. I think the next one will come pretty soon, but some of these comments, McJerry Jones, Bilal K, come on now. Richard, can we bring Sandy back for the postseason? Hey, I'm pretty sure he could get guys out even at this age. He still got it. So a couple more here. Mr. Classic, Chan Ho Park also gave up two grand slams to Tatis Jr.'s dad. Y'all never forget that. 10 on school for Jake. Couple more here. We got the Let's Be Honest Dodgers fan. Shohei leadoff home runs are fantastic, but wouldn't they be far better with two men on and Shohei batting third or fourth in the lineup? That's from Bilal K. Depends on how you look at it. I mean, you still have some guys that can go deep and some run producers there. I still think they'll eventually probably put Shohei back in the two hole, and then you kind of hope that the bottom of that lineup continues to produce and give him some run scoring opportunities. But if he continues to perform like this, and the Dodgers win a ton of games, it's going to be tough to move him back. But Nando39 says, Bronny going to the YMCA. Okay, messed up. So that's going to do it, guys. Enjoy your day off from Dodger baseball. Enjoy watching the NBA draft, apparently. But that's going to do it for Mr. Tonio Taters. Producer Antonio, for myself, DMAC underscore LA. You can follow me on X and Instagram at that handle. Also, subscribe to the channel. Hit the subscribe button. Hit the notification bell. Hit the like button. Jason Mayo says, you miss Lance Lynn. Yeah, I didn't include Lance Lynn. I'm going to give you a finish in for that one. But thanks again, guys. Remember, nothing brings us together quite like Dodger baseball. And until next time, think blue, bleed blue, and I'm out.